Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. Today we're talking basketball. Raging Cajun basketball with longtime Cajun fan Mike Hebert. Mike, how are you this afternoon? Or this morning, actually.
Yeah, well, I guess it'll be this afternoon when people listen to this. I'm doing okay this morning. Had some surgery recently, but fortunately I went as well as could be expected, so I'm grateful. Looking forward to previewing the season, what Cajun fans can expect from the various players as we continue in our discussion here.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump right in. Let's talk. A lot of activity in the off season. You know, Jordan Brown left, which he's gone, so he's gone. But there's a lot of other things that happened during the summer. Let's jump right in there and get your thoughts on what happened.
Okay. Well, first of all, the summer was pretty normal, other than Jordan, as far as 4 1-hour practices a week during the summer session. Those went well. Through the end of the summer, we brought a new assistant coach in, I guess right at the end of spring, beginning of summer. Donovan Cates left for family reasons. He was an assistant coach brought in last year. What I understand, it had nothing to do with, you know, his displeasure here, loved it here, just had some family reasons that he left. So we brought in Philip Schumpert, S-H-U-M-P-E-R-T. He joins us after he spent a season as the interim head coach at North Carolina A&T, where they won 13 games, which was a great improvement over the previous year, from what I understand. Coach Shump, as he is known, has lots of experience in the JUCO ranks, including as a head coach. So I find that interesting. You know, if Coach Marlon has to miss a game again because of COVID, hopefully not, like we had a couple of years ago, we've got somebody who's capable of taking the reins. And bringing Coach Shump aboard allows Neil Harden to go back to his role of being the lead scout for upcoming opponents, a role that he's pretty good at. He did well in that role last year. So welcome, Coach Shump.
Yep. Just one thing there with Neil Harden. I am amazed, and I guess to get to this level, I'm always amazed because when you go to practice, you hear Coach Harden telling the guys what's going to happen. And then when you go to the game, you look at it and you're going like, didn't you stop that? He told you yesterday that this was going to happen, you know, type of deal. So Neil is a very good scout. So I'm glad he's back in that position.
Right. Sorry. It worked well last year. More recently, we had a very successful NIL function that was held on October the 12th at the DoubleTree. Net funds raised for that were over $95,000. Of course, it was just one night, but it was several months of work that went into putting that on. Chris Landry, father, one of our players that was instrumental in making that happen, as well as John Aiken, who you've had on your show in the past. The most exciting portion of that evening to me was the live auction, where the players who were dressed in suits actually went around and encouraged the bidding to increase. Brought a lot of energy to the room. Everybody had a great time. So hopefully that event can be duplicated for the other sports. Yeah, I know you were there. What did you think of it?
I loved the event. I thought it was the timing and everything was perfect as far as going not too long. I liked the live auction, had plenty of items for the silent auction. You had Wayne Toops afterwards. You know, you had I won't say a small window of time there, but, you know, it was really an event that pushed a lot of activities into a small window. But at the same time, you didn't feel rushed. So I enjoyed it very much.
Also, the food was excellent. Kudos to the DoubleTree.
Yeah, okay. The DoubleTree and our Lieutenant Governor
Nunsgesser, I think it's the way.
Yes.
Something like that.
He provided the shrimp for the dinner that night. So thank you to him as well.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Kudos to him for that. Moving on to things on the court, we had a close scrimmage that was held on the weekend of homecoming, day after homecoming. Of course, it is closed, so information on this we can share is limited due to the NCAA rules. We can say the following. The opponent was another D1 school in the area that and a competitive game was played. Coach Marlon made some comments in the recent podcast with Jay Walker about that event, so I can just repeat those. And those were he was pleased with the effort and the hustle, and I think that's a trademark of our program. I rarely see anybody not giving 100%. He liked the chemistry on the floor as the guys on the bench were supporting the guys on the floor while they played. He thought the ball movement was good. A couple of players he recognized was Landon Fields, who apparently was instrumental in the second half. And Kobe Julian was 9 for 15 from the floor in that game with a couple of threes and 5 rebounds. So Kobe must have been the best player on the floor that day. So I think the team got out of it what they can. And maybe more so than the next thing I'm going to talk about is the exhibition game, which was held Monday night, where they beat UT Tyler 80-57. As I said, that type of game, maybe the scrimmage does more for you. But since we have a real game coming up next Monday night, he probably wanted a game time atmosphere to prepare them. And don't let the score fool you. You know, we had a 25-point lead at half. The lead was 34 in the second half. The defense and the free throw shooting was good all the whole game. And the starters played, and including one of the top bench guys, less than half the game. So the backups got a lot of minutes, including some guys at the end of the roster. So having said that, will these two games help prepare us for the season? We'll see next Monday night. Any comments on the scrimmage or the exhibition game, Craig?
No, I mean, as a baseball guy, the only thing I'll say is on that is, you know, you watch, I enjoy, spring training baseball, but in the end, it doesn't mean anything. And that's really what Monday night's game was, more or less a spring training game to get the guys, to get some guys some playing time and see what they can do on the court against different competition. So
that's correct. The guys on the end of the bench get to play. You get to put it on film. You get to show them what you can improve on, what you did well. But the scrimmage and the exhibition game are really meant to help prepare you for the season. The results really don't count. In the scrimmages, you can't foul out. You can foul 10 times. So who knows? Who knows how that would go in the real game? Okay. But yep. That was the off season. Now we're ready to go into the regular season. And I thought we'd go into what do we expect from the positions? You know, we can start with the point guards if you like.
Yeah, let's go there because you've got two guys returning. So we've got some experience there. And it seems like the one thing that Coach Marlin has done well, I shouldn't say the one thing. One of the many things that he's done well, though, is bring in point guards. And this is a year with Alfred Payton, Jay Wright and those guys. And we've got two guys that have experience. So what's your thoughts on the point guard starting there?
Okay, well, Timus Folks returns as the starter. He's number zero, preseason all-conference. I think he's our only player that's on the preseason all-conference. He's on the all-conference first team with preseason. And he's the best point guard we've had since Marcus Stroman, who was the leader of the 18-19 team, followed those other two guys you talked about. And Marcus was a great passer. Timus is a steady ball handler. Maybe a little even better handling the ball than Marcus was. Tense competitor. Hates to lose. Sometimes he wants to win so bad, may have caused him to play out of control at times. But he did lead the conference in assists last season. Now, this year, I'm wondering, without Jordan Brown as a focal point, just he made a point to get the ball to Jordan at times. Where will the assist come from? I expect him to go to a variety of people as, you know, we may not have one guy we're going to rely on. We're just going to have good ball movement, and that's the key at least. Move the ball around, get the open shot. And sometimes, you know, he may make the pass, the ball come back to him, and his second or third pass and the rotation may end up in the assist.
And this, you know, one thing you talked about with that, as far as I apologize for interrupting, but the not having Jordan there will be it'll be different. I'm not going to say it's going to be better or worse with his ball. But one thing that we have seen through the years with point guards in Coach Marlin's system, and especially Jay Wright and Alfred Payton, is that they have improved each year within Coach Marlin's system. So I'm looking forward to Themis taking that next step.
Yeah. Reports I'm getting from people close to the program is that he's improved his mid-range shot and his three-point shot. Last year, he got a lot of open threes because the ball would go into Jordan, and, you know, it may come back to him in the second or third pass. Not sure how he's going to get those. It's probably part of the natural rotation. But he has worked on improving his shooting. Hopefully that'll come to pass, and we'll see it in the games.
Well, I think there is, you know, I think with the smaller roster, hopefully we're moving the ball quicker around the perimeter, looking for that open shot. And then that way they can, if we're making the defensive run towards each shooter, that Themis will have the opportunity to have an open shot again.
Yeah, those usually come at the end of the possession. You know, he's looking to get the ball to other people early in their possession. And generally what I find is if he's, and this goes for the backup too, Michael Thomas, if you can make a first good pass, it may not be the pass that leads to the basket, but one that gets the ball swinging, then the possession usually ends up in a positive manner. It's not like a football team that gets the first down and they get in a rhythm. Make a first good pass, not necessarily to the basket, but one that gets the rotations moving on the defense. I just mentioned Michael Thomas, number two. Sometimes they call him Deuce because he's number two. Michael, I think, is underrated as a shooter from the perimeter. He tends to dribble too much at times. He's not nearly as strong as we'd like him to be. Hopefully he's improved that in the offseason. Like I just said, once he makes that initial pass and gets out of the dribble, everything flows better to the offense. Mike and Thiemus both are good defensively. Mike, I think, is underrated defensive player. He uses his quickness well. So look, here's going to be something to watch this year. And I think it happened for a couple of minutes the other night. Is at times Mike and Thiemus will be in the game at the same time. Probably towards the middle part of the first half, you might see a 3 to 4 minute stretch where they're in together. And you've got two decent ball handlers in. And I bet in that situation, Mike will end up with some open threes. It makes sense to have them in the game at the same time since they both have lots of experience. This Mike's a fourth-year junior. Thiemus played, this is, I guess, his fourth year of college ball. 1 year in South Carolina State, 1 year in junior college, will be second year here. I think the strength of the team may be the point guards. The point guard's like your quarterback. He's got the ball. He starts everything. And we've got two good ones there. Any final thoughts on the points?
No, I'm looking forward to watching them play. I agree with you totally there. I think these guys, if they continue to improve, will only make this whole team better. So,
okay. Yep. We'll move to the off ball. And we have one experienced guy and one guy who's a newcomer looked in those roles. The starter's going to be Cantrell Garnett once again, number 22. Cantrell's a fourth year junior. So he also has lots of experience. His strong point is the short corner three. Not necessarily the three at the top, but yeah, they actually practice, you know, if they get a defensive rebound or run, and he actually runs to the spot. He's the short corner three, here's his spot. And so they look for him there. And in the last season, he was a little bit of a slump. You know, he made a couple of threes in Monday night's game, so maybe that's encouraging to start this season. And teams do make him put it on the floor, and the key for him there to get out of that is to dribble to an open spot where he can maybe get a pass off, get the defense going, and get the offense going and the defense moving, and even take a mid-range. He did that a couple of times last year. He probably needs to practice that. They run him off the line, dribble to a spot like around the free throw line, and you've got a good mid-range shot there, and that's better than forcing a three with guys on you. Here's the key point about Cantrell. Even though he was a slump last year at the end of the year, he kept starting. And the reason for that is he often guards the other team's best perimeter player and does a good job at it. There were several games last year we held the opponent's best perimeter player to a low percentage and below their average. I remember one game against Southern Miss especially, which started our 10-game winning streak. So underrated defensive player. And let's see that, you know, he also participated in the Swamp Slam. He was our shooter against the women. He made 18 threes in like a minute. I think Destiny Rice beat him by 1 3, and that might have been, and she might have got off a little late. That's all I'll say. Man, that was a fun event. I forgot about that in the offseason where, you know, the men and the women got into a free throw little contest and Jay Walker presented the rings to the team. That was a week or so ago.
Good deal.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say good deal. An event I wasn't able to make, but like back to Garnett real quick. I don't think a lot of people realize either that he's 6'1". When you're on the basketball court playing with these bigger guys, you know, he looks like he's 5'10", 5'11", you know, and he's 6'1". I wish he'd put a little more weight on him. And I think that's a problem with Michael Thomas as well. A lot of times that he'll get bumped and knocked out of the way. Both of them could use to put a little weight on him, and that's right. Coming from a fat guy. So,
yeah. And make that weight muscle.
Yes. Yes.
I agree with that. We'll see if they're a little stronger this season. Now, the next guy I'm going to talk about, I think, has a body that's ready for college play. is number five. He's a pure freshman, London Fields. I think he'll be the primary backup to Cantrell. Going back to, I guess, halfway through the summer, right around the 4th of July, he started indicating that he was ready for the college game, and he's continued that in the scrimmage and in the exhibition. He looks to be our best scorer amongst our three freshmen. He can also hit the three, maybe not as smooth a shot as Cantrell, but he's better athletically, and his body's a little stronger. He can get the rim if he need be. I expect that if it's a late game situation and he's hitting that day and Cantrell's not, you might see him in the game at crunch time. And they may go offense defense in those situations. Not that London, freshman from Mississippi, can't play defense, but Cantrell's outstanding at it. And so, you know, sometimes during timeouts, you know, if you need a score, and Cantrell's off that day, you may see London in the game and Cantrell come back in on defense. Really encouraged about this guy. He appears to be maybe the one freshman who's ready offensively, at least, and what will not hurt you defensively.
And yeah, it's also on him. I think with Garnett defending the other team's best player, that tends to wear him down. So he's going to definitely need some time to spare it on the court. So yes.
Yep. Yeah. Well, a lot of responsibility for a pure freshman there, and you know, going to get significant minutes in the two guard role. We can move on to the small forwards. Kobe Julian, it's going to be our starter. Kobe's number four. And if he's healthy, and he has been so far, he'll be the best player on the team. He represented us well at the media days, spoke very well in that role. If you remember against Tennessee in the NCAA tournament game back in mid-March, he led a comeback that just fell short, where he scored at all three levels of the rims, the three, gets some mid-range. Speaking of the mid-range, you know, I look for him to drive to the basket when he gets the ball. And if he's cut off, he'll take the mid-range this year. When he was a freshman, he would either go to try to get to the layup, get fouled, or take the three. I think mid-range is an underrated part of his game. I understand he's given the green light to go that route. So that might help us. In the past, he struggled defensively due to his knee status. I like for him to be fine on that end now that he's healthy. Against, you know, even when he was here as a freshman, his knee was still a little bothered from previous. He's probably as strong as he's been since he's been here. But sometimes these surgeries you have will make your knee stronger. Looking forward to a strong season from Kobe. And especially if Kobe hits his first couple of shots, he can have a big game, like a lot of players.
Yeah, I think he's going to be one of the most exciting players on the team this year. Especially you brought up the game against Tennessee last year. If he's anywhere near that performance, Cajun fans are going to be very excited about the play that he brings on the court.
Yeah, we had an postseason awards banquet for the team, and in that game, somebody asked him, Kobe, how about the Tennessee game? And his response was, I'm going to play that way every game this coming season. Well, I'm sure he intends to play that well. Sometimes the rim won't let the ball go in as often there. So, but, you know, he's positive that he can carry that situation, that performance on into the regular season. Of course, we'll need a backup look for number 10, Blake Butler, to be the primary backup of the small forward. Blake, he's 6'5", 6'6". He was the best JUCO player in Mississippi last year, and he played three seasons JUCO ball, with one of the COVID years not counting. He can get the rim, also shoot the three. His three-point ball is inconsistent. I know he made one the other night, missed a few. I think it would make him to be a stronger contribution around the time conference play starts, because I've had other coaches tell me that JUCO players, yes, they're more mature, but it's still different than – still different at the college level than it is in JUCO and NFL high school. So, but mid-year or 10 games, when you see JUCO players make a big jump. Now, Timus Fuchs was good from day one, but he had played a year of Division I ball, so it was a little different.
Yep.
So I expect him to see him play well, and you know, around mid-season. I think he scored a few buckets Monday night, but he was a little inconsistent from his shot. We'll see, but he's the Kobe's backup. You ready to move on to the power forwards?
Yes, sir. Let's get him.
Okay. The starter is number one, Joe Charles. Joe was going to be starter last year after the summer, but Terrence Lewis came in late in the summer or early in the fall, took a spot. But Joe excelled in his role as providing defensive energy off the bench. He came in with a lot of intensity. Now the question is, can he play that hard for 30 minutes instead of 20 as a starter. Now, that's what I wonder about. He plays so hard. Can his intensity stay there? He's a good offensive rebounder. In fact, he led the team in rebounding in Monday night scrimmage. I read an article with Kevin Footman. Rebounding is going to be his focus, and we'll need it this year. Now, he hit a couple of threes the other night. A little flat shot can be inconsistent at times, and he also is sort of inconsistent at the free throw line. I think that's because he plays so hard on the court, especially when he extends a lot of energy defensively. He has trouble calming himself down when he gets to the line. But he and Kobe Jr., I noticed, so missed the first one and make the second one there, a two-shot situation. And that's just because they need to calm themselves down and focus.
You know, Joe Charles, with his wingspan, can become a very good defensive player. And I think, although I think he rebounds the ball well, but he's going to have to do more of that this season and also play, just step up his defensive game a little bit there.
Yeah, he's good defensively, but do it for 30 minutes, not 20. Now, Joe may play center at times. That might be a surprise to people. But in the Sun Belt Conference, it's a guard-oriented lineup. Sometimes people would go with small lineups. So you might see Joe at center and Kobe at small at the power forward. In fact, Kobe is the backup power forward. We have nobody else on the roster, the athletic ability to do that. So when you see Kobe there, you'll see Butler go into the three spot, or even Fields might move into the three spot at times if we've got a really small lineup. You might even see things at times where Joe's the center and we got four guards if Kobe's in foul trouble. And that'll allow us to press and put a lot of pressure on the ball. Again, that's when we're in a small lineup situation, which in the Sun Belt Conference, to match up with opponents, you might have to go to that at times because it's a guard-heavy league.
Yep.
Yeah. That surprised you that, you know, we might go that small at times?
No, not really. If you look at the lineup and the height that we have, I think you're almost going to have to. And Coach Marlin's done that in the past, even with Brown being there. When you had Terrence Lewis at the center, you went with basically four guards almost, or three guards and a forward. So it's not going to surprise me at all. And I agree with you, it's a guard-oriented league. I'm just hoping when we go small that we're able to continue defensively the way Coach Marlin likes to play.
Yeah, and the rebounds become a question then, and you've got to cause turnovers to offset that. Now, one thing I do have a concern about with Kobe being the primary backup small forward to Joe is foul trouble. Coach Marlin, and like most college coaches, pulls a guy in the first half if they get two fouls. How do we handle that? It's going to be up to the coaches to handle that rotation. Well, you know, and we'll talk about the centers here in a second, and that may come into play. But how to manage the foul situation if we get Kobe or any of the other guys in foul trouble in the first half? But Kobe specifically, because he'll be the three and the backup four at times. So that's a concern to me.
Yep.
Okay. We'll move on to the centers. The starting center is going to be number 34, Hosanna Kitnich. Kitenge, but I understand it's pronounced Kitnich. Now, Hosanna is a wide body inside player who came to us from JUCO ball, but he has experience at the D1 level in his first year at Coastal Carolina. In fact, he played in the cage game in the Cajun Dome back in his first year when he scored 6 points. He's not a guy we'll make the focal point to throw the ball into like we did Jordan. He can score inside if it's in proper position. He'll get the ball as part of the normal rotation with the ball, you know, being passed around until he gets open. He's generally a good passer. People have compared him with his hands to Bryce Washington. Not quite as athletic as Bryce. He's a high basketball IQ player. He rebounds from using his ball, can block it out, and having big hands. Now, the other night, I understand he had a rough game by putting the ball on the floor, which surprises me because he's known as a high basketball IQ player. I suspect that's a one-off, and you may not see that again. Here's a way he's going to – go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of that is, you know, when you're playing a team like UT Tyler or in an exhibition game, you tend to do things that aren't in your natural game. So you're trying to do a little bit more because you're playing against normally smaller players and things like that. And you're trying to, lack of a better word, dominate them when, in fact, sometimes the smaller players, the quicker hands and things like that can come out and and go against you with your size. So
yeah, he hadn't played in a college game out in JUCO in a few years, so maybe just a little rusty. Now here's an area I think he'll help us that maybe some fans will overlook. Oftentimes, you know, the offense will get a little stagnant, you know, where maybe the off ball movement is not good enough. You end up at the end of the shot clock. And generally there we use a high ball screen for the point guard, whoever it may be. And with that big body, he can be very effective at setting that high ball screen around the top of the key, allowing the point guard to penetrate and maybe get a decent shot off before the end of the shot clock. So I think that's an underrated area he'll help us. Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed that. A lot of times we use our center to set those high, it's called high ball screens, when the ball is ready to the three-point yep. line, top of the key. Really helps when you have a body like that.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And that's where somewhere I think that I hate to keep going back to Jordan Brown, but a player like Jordan Brown, I didn't find that very effectively. Too many times the big guys that are tall and skinny, they like to stick out their elbow or stick out their hip or their leg, and they're not setting the screen properly, and that's where we get a foul that is unnecessary. To me, is one of the most unnecessary fouls there are. Now, if you're going to set a hard screen and you're setting it and the player runs into you and you didn't give him room to turn, that's different to me than trying to stick out your elbow or your knee or your hip. That's a foolish foul that should never happen.
Great observation. So I don't think we'll see that as often in that role was on. Jordan was a great player. That was no player's perfect. That happened to be one of his weaknesses.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. The backup to Hosanna is going to be number 23, Kyron Radliff, redshirt freshman from New Orleans. Completely different player than Hosanna. He can step outside and hit the three. Has a good perimeter shot. He's probably our best shot blocker, and he jumps well. Now, his rebounding comes from his athletic ability. He tends to play a little tentative and uncertain at times. You know, really hasn't played college ball. You know, redshirted last year. If Kobe gets in foul trouble and we're having trouble rebounding, I think you may say Hosanna and Kyron on the floor at the same time. It's the opposite of the small lineup. That'll be our big lineup. So,
and I don't think that's a bad thing, especially with Ratcliffe being able to take the outside shot and move a player out. I think that's just going to open up sometimes underneath for Kitnich.
Yeah, and that's two different styles at center.
Yep.
Now we'll see if he can improve his blocking out. You know, he gets his rebound from athletic ability. His fundamentals needs to be a little better. If we do go big with him and Hosanna at the same time, he needs to move his feet a little quicker on defense, you know, since he's used to being a big guy and he's going to be basically the power forward in some roles. Now, that's nine guys we've talked about. There's a wild card, and that's pure freshman number 13, Brandon Hardy from Zachary. He'll play some of either two or three spots. That's the 10 man in rotation. He'll get into the game. You know, if feels a Butler having a bad game, he'll get in there. In fact, in Monday night's game, he scored 12. I think he was a leading scorer. He was a leading scorer, he was our leading minutes guy. He comes in with a reputation as being a very strong defender. He's got a body ready for the college game. He's got a, you know, he's unlike PJ Hardy, who played a few years ago, was a little skinny. Brandon's upper body is pretty strong. He's pretty ripped. Now, he can score at the basket too because he's strong. Made a couple of threes the other night, and Coach Marlin said that's not his game, but maybe he'll improve it. And also in a pinch, he can play point guard as he played it his junior year in high school. So that's our 10 guys that you'll see play most of the minutes in the games that really count.
Yeah, Hardy, I wasn't able to make the game on Monday night for various reasons, but Hardy is one person that I kept getting texts about all night that they were impressed with. So looking forward to watching that young man play and develop over the next couple years.
Yeah, right now I don't have him ahead of Fields. Of course, Hardy did well Monday night. That's an exhibition game. The coaches are gone by all the practices they've had and the scrimmage, which was against a D1 opponent versus a D2 opponent. But still, they'll find a way to get him in the game. And, you know, maybe some games he's on and Fields is off as the backup to Garnett. Maybe they will be in at times, at 2 and 3 if Hardy's off. So Coach Marlin, one of his strong points, one of the former assistants told me once, one of his strongest points is being able to figure out pretty quickly in the first half who's on that night and who's off. So we'll have a lot of guards to choose from. Okay. So Now we've got some other guys on the team, what I call the developmental guys. Let's go quickly over those if you don't mind.
Yep. Let's
Yeah,
do it.
the first one is Chancellor White. Now, surprised to hear people say he's a rotational player since the development players that he played last year. However, he suffered a knee injury in the summer. He's likely out for the season. At some point during the year, he'll probably be cleared to resume contact basketball activity. He's running and shooting right now and doing very well. I don't expect him to play this year. It's unlikely, but reason I put him on there, a developmental list, because he'll continue to work in his game probably, you know, mid-season when he's able to return to practice, help the team out that way. Looking forward to him coming back next. If he sits out the whole season, by the way, he'll get a redshirt year. It's not like football where you can play four games and retain your eligibility. You play 1 second in a real game, you lose the eligibility for the year. I'm hoping Yep. basketball changes that one day.
I agree. I think that is one of the worst. When they change it for football, I don't understand why you're not changing it for all the sports. It's foolish.
Not only okay, four is one third of basketball, so you could say, okay, 8, 9 for basketball. Four is one third of football, rather. And then baseball could be 12 or 13, something like that.
Yes.
Be great for pitchers.
Okay. Absolutely, especially younger pitchers that need that development.
Yeah. We have another scholarship player who's, I think, who did well Monday night late in the game, named Giovanni Nanusi. He's a 6'5 or 6'4 guard. You'll see him with the game. I come to determine maybe later in the season you'll see him in more crunch time minutes with progress. I have nothing negative about that guy. He's just not as advanced as the other two freshmen we talked about earlier.
Yeah, he's an interesting player, played overseas, and you and I talked this summer about it, or maybe
it was this summer.
This summer about it. We were wondering if he was from Spain or from Italy. He's from Italy, but he played in Spain. So that's where the confusion came in from. But holds dual citizenship for Italy and the United States. I agree with you. I think he's not as well developed as some of the other players. But at the same time, I think he's got the ability as the season goes on possibly to get a few extra minutes in there. So
yeah, when we say developmental, we're not saying anything negative. We're just saying they're not as ready as the other guys. And Coach Dez talks about in football all the time, but we develop players. We have them improve as time goes on, right?
Absolutely.
So it's the same thing in basketball. Like you talked about, our point guards have improved in the past. We've had guys who didn't play much their freshman, sophomore year, played more when they were juniors. Our next scholarship player that's in the development is Vinny Stagona. He's a good outside shooter. He missed a lot of last season with a foot injury, and he's now out with a hamstring pull. And, you know, hamstrings can keep you out a few weeks. I think he would have been one of the guys participating in the Swamp Slam three-point contest without that. He's walking fine, but he's probably still a few days away before he can really play. And then we've got a couple of walk-ons. Christian Landry is from St. Thomas More, played last year at LSUE. Like all walk-ons, their best job is to help team in practice, and when they get in the game, take minutes from the starters and some of these blowouts. I'm sure he'll do fine. I didn't notice anything terrible or graded in the game the other night. Just competent player. We have one more walk-on is Isaiah Crawford. He was a walk-on last year from New Orleans. Since he's been on the team, he hasn't been able to practice due to a medical issue. He joined the team last year when we had open tryouts after Carter Domingue left the team for the seminary. Now, last thing I heard from Coach Marlin is optimism. He'll be able to practice soon. Apparently a great kid. So that's our 15 guys. We've got 12 can play right now, and 3 are injured. Hopefully Chancellor won't play this season, probably. Maybe Vinny and Isaiah will get cleared to play here soon. That's the line. That's the roster. I think we can conclude, unless you have any final comments on it, about maybe a prediction of what type of style of play you'll see from the team as we go forward.
No, I think we've talked about it a little bit, unless you want to go into it more. But I think we've talked about it in the sense of heavy on the guard play. And when I say, not just guard play, though, I mean heavy from the outside shooting, which I think will allow, once you start hitting those shots, will allow some of that to open up underneath. But the key to this team is going to be able to hit those outside shots. And I'm kind of like you. with I think the mid-range jumper has been lost in college basketball, and I'm hoping this team can bring it back because I think it can be very, very positive outlook for this team if they start hitting those shots.
Yeah, I think the defense is going to be the focus of the team because we'll put a lot of ball pressure, and you know we don't have the height we had last year. We want to speed up the play to a level that makes the opponent feel uncomfortable. Either you create a turnover or they take a shot that they're not in rhythm with that allows you to that, and if that happens, you're more likely to get the defensive rebound. And that can result in inside baskets at times for you when you get in transition. When you do that at times, you know, when putting pressure on the ball may go inside a little quicker than you like, and they may score in there at times. And maybe Joe or Radliff can block a couple of shots there. But, you know, you just got to be patient with that. If they get a couple of inside baskets and you're pressuring the ball, just don't get out of it. Keep doing it as the game goes on. And if you have a more depth late in the game, they'll turn it over or they'll maybe take shots they're not comfortable with. And we talked earlier about, you know, going with a small lineup at times when Joe's at center. And that allows you to even more so with all the guards to put pressure on the ball. I mean, a lot of defensive quickness. And offensively, without Jordan there, look for a more balanced approach where we're just going to find the open guy. Get the offense moving with a good first pass. Get the defense scrambling. And whoever's open, you know, take the shot. Don't be scared to let it go. Kobe's going to be our featured player. If there is one we're going to feature, I think earlier we mentioned that he can score from all three levels. He can hit the mid-range. And if your defense is not steady, let the three fly. So I'll conclude by saying I've heard some people's opinion from Monday night that we may overly rely on the three ball at times. Coach Marlin said, we got a lot of guys that can shoot it. We shot it okay last year. Thinks we can shoot even better this year. Now, people wonder, well, what happens if you're off in the perimeter that night and if you're so heavily oriented to the three-point game? Well, you can still win, can't you, if you do a bunch of other things right? And some of those things, you limit your turnovers, you limit your offensive rebounds. Now, that's funny. If you're taking a lot of threes, you can maybe get some offensive rebounds, but the other team can also get runouts. You got to get back. Yeah, you know, your guards got to get back and protect the basket. Play solid defense, which – everything I've heard from the scrimmage and people went the other night, that's one thing they were impressed about. Defense was solid all night, and you got to do that every game. And, of course, it won't be a three-pointer every possession. We'll have nights where we hit over 40% from our threes, and it'll be fine. And if it won't be a three-pointer, it might be some mid-range. We can get to the basket in transition. Themis and Kobe can drive to the basket. So we're looking forward to Monday night to see if all this preparation and these players we've talked about are ready to go because we're playing a good opponent on Monday night.
Yes, we are. I think the next I'm about to say the next two games, both Youngstown State and Toledo, I think will show us a lot about this team. So
right, we're playing two conference champions from last season. And both teams lost some players. Youngstown State specifically, from what I recall, lost three or four of their starters. But I also recall reading something that they are thought to be one of the better teams in handling the NIL issue up in that area of the country. So I'm sure the players they brought in some transfers, are very competent. So it'll be a very interesting game on Monday night.
Wow. Very interesting. Looking forward to getting out of the Cajun Dome and watching that game. So
yeah, and Toledo will be the MAC Challenge game on the Saturday, a week from Saturday. I'm not sure what time that game is.
It'll be 6 o'clock on Saturday.
6 o'clock Central?
Yes.
Okay. And I hope it's on ESPN Plus. If not, I'll find some way to watch it. But the game Monday, by the way, reminder for folks, it starts at 7:30. It is a doubleheader. The women are playing earlier at 5 o'clock. Pros and cons to that. You know, some people don't like having to wait, but Coach Gary's team will be out there. Get a look at them if you want to go early. So 5 for the women, 7:30 for the men. On Monday, November 6th, may seem early for some people why the season's starting so early, but the season starts now on the Monday before the second Friday of November. That's a sort of, there'll be a lot of games Monday night throughout the country. And the reason they're doing it Monday is because of the election day. Every other year is a federal election day. Many states are not like Louisiana. They have their state elections on the first Tuesday of November. So they just, NCAA just made it Solid rule. We'll start the Monday before the second Friday. So okay. You can look for that going forward. I want to conclude with one other thing that I haven't mentioned to you in the past. Maybe we talked about it others. There's a new rule that came out, which has come up with a lot of criticism. And that is the NIT, which is part of the NCAA, has done away with the automatic bid to the conference champions. They're giving more NIT bids and home games to the two teams that don't make the NCAA from the Big Six conferences. Basically, those are the P5 football plus the Big East. That is not a good thing for the mid-majors. We talk about it being a one-bid league, and a lot of our fans don't like to hear that. But in reality, last year, 23 of the 32 teams had one bids. Excuse me, 23 of the 32 leagues were one-bid leagues. And some years, it's 24. So if we went, I don't know, 27-4 this year, in this season, I still don't think we'd get an automatic bid.
Yeah.
If we were to fall through in the conference tournament. So everything goes through that conference tournament. That does not mean the regular season is not important, because almost every year, the team that's playing well going to the conference tournament will do well. We were playing pretty good last year, and we won it. So you want to be doing well in February. It's actually peak of the conference tournament time. And that's in Pensacola in March again. I'm disappointed in that rule. I haven't talked to the coaches what they think about it, but it's been receiving a lot of criticism from national basketball writers. In fact, it's the NCAA, I guess, figuring out with the transfer portal on here, all this that may have some impact, and they're going to use this net rating, which is really a replacement for the RPI. And net rating apparently still uses strength of schedule, but it also looks like a lot of statistics, how well you do defensively, and you know, what's your turnover level, a whole bunch of statistics. And one thing they do also use is margin of victory at times, which means some of these larger schools will look to beat up and will run up the score on smaller schools on these pay-for-play games early in the season. So look, that's a change in college basketball. I don't like it. I bet most people don't like it. Only people who like it will be the fans of the P6 schools. Again, national basketball writers don't like it. Any thoughts on that, Greg?
The only thing I will say is the NCAA does not understand what makes March Madness, and I've been saying this for a year, is Cinderella. And Cinderella is not a 16-15 Syracuse team. It is a mid-major coming to it, if you want to call it that. And the other thing, you talked about the one-bid leagues. I would love to know how many of them that get more than one bid actually play FBS football as well. So it's I think it's all about greed, and I've said this before. The only thing that is more crooked than the NCAA is the United States Congress. So I think I would rather have the mafia picking teams than I would have the NCAA. So
yeah,
and that might be a little extreme, but it is what it is. I think the NCAA is crooked. They have over 40 executives there that make over $300,000 a year. Their president was making over $1 million a year. It is unbelievable. So
yeah, okay. I won't disagree with anything you said. I would say a recommendation I would have is if you're a conference champion and go back to the old ways and you get an automatic bid, guarantee a first round home game to them. If you're not a conference champion, that would do wonders for college basketball interest and the NIT. I'll leave the local schools out of it, but suppose the Cajuns won it, we're in it, and we're hosting Mississippi State in the NIT or another SEC team. You can figure out which one would be popular. I think that would do one for the interest of college basketball and restore the NCAA. And if they don't want to do that, then guarantee a home game in the second round if they happen to win their first round game. That would do more for basketball than this crazy rule they just came up with. But, you know,
I could honestly see, though, in the NIT, a Big 10, a Big 12, SEC, whatever you want to call them, I can see them turning down a bid to the NIT having to play here, because there's no win for them.
That's true. So, that's true. Yeah, but you'd have to have some financial incentive for it and share the money from the gate or something like that. But anyway, we can't solve that problem. You just have to live with it. Win as many games as you can and be in good shape, playing well, time conference tournament times comes, and try to get an NCAA bid like we did last year. I don't discount the regular season at all because, you know, every game counts. There's rivalries in there, like where we're going to play Louisiana Tech and McNeese, and of course all our conference rivals, and it's all those bragging rights are important, and recruiting as well. So we'll see what happens with that. I think I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 1-year rule, and the blowback of it will change it back to the way it was in the future.
Either that, or they're going to get rid of it altogether. So
yep. Okay, I enjoyed it, Craig. Anything else to conclude?
No, the only thing that I will say is the game at Toledo is on ESPN Plus, 6 o'clock Central. For those that are looking for the game, the MAC Sunbelt Conference Challenge. The only other thing, Mike, let's get back together. Maybe we can watch the Youngstown State and Toledo game, and then we can get more of what this team, our thoughts are on the team before they go into the Gulf Coast Showcase. So
yeah, that'll be roughly about 2 weeks away.
Yep.
Because that Youngstown State game he's talking about is not this Saturday. Excuse me, the Toledo game. It's Saturday, November 11th.
Correct. Which the Cajun football team is off that weekend, having played on Thursday against Southern Miss. So
yeah, so
no conflicts.
All right, great. All right, Craig, we'll talk after those two games and get our analysis done.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it as always.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to We're Talking. We've been talking Cajun basketball. Thanks to Mike Hebert, and I'm Craig Malonsong. Thanks for listening.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.